With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Chelsea, and I love true crime.
And I'm David, and I love horror movies.
And this is Based on a True Crime. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's mini-sode of Based on a True Crime. A little late this week, but I think equally late to last week, so hopefully we didn't make you wait too long for a new episode. I do want to start with some thank yous to our new 5-star reviewers. There's quite a few because it's actually been a while since we last recorded. I want to thank the Crime Girls Pod. They're actually another podcast that is really great. It's a mother-daughter team talking about true crime. Kodak 2057, Sam C. Simpson, G. Fave, which I think is the host of Married to Murder, but I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it is. So we're going to be doing a cross promo with them for our next full episode. But if you want to get a head start and check them out now, you can go for it. Zack Attack, Muppets Mom, Drooling Banjos.
Hey, that's a good name.
Yeah. CaliCat03, Huntor, who is one of the hosts of Murder and Such, a podcast that I've talked about a couple times. It's based in Dayton that I have really been digging. And finally, Sammy Rizza, who is one of the hosts of Just Another Murder podcast, which is a really great true crime podcast out of Australia. So, you know, thank you so much, everybody, for the 5-star reviews. We're almost at 30, which just blows my mind. And, you know, maybe by the time you hear this, we'll be at 30 and I'll be doing a little dance. But if we're still at 29, you know, you just slip us that 30th review and make my day.
I'm doing a little dance right now.
All right. Well, for this week's episode, we decided to do a bit of a theme. This is where the podcast is going to be based on our true life.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, no, not quite. So we are, you know, it's our 1-year anniversary almost of being married. Our 4-year anniversary of our first date. And we are going to New Orleans. Yeah. So we were thinking about what kind of stories we can tell. There's an abundance of just really crazy New Orleans true crime stories. And a lot of them are movies, but we decided to take some characters from American Horror Story Coven, which is one of the seasons that we've seen, the other being Murder House. And at some point we'll get caught up on all of them. It's just a lot of TV to watch in addition to our movie viewings that take up so much of our time. But I did love Coven because it's based in New Orleans, and a lot of those stories I've been reading about for years. And
yeah, no, Coven is a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it, and it was a good setup to, I guess, get the American Horror Story concept going.
Yes. So I decided to do some background research and talk about Delphine Lalaurie, which is probably one of the most infamous true crime cases to come out of New Orleans. And David is doing
The Axeman of New Orleans.
Yes, which is really the other huge case to come out of that city. So let's get started. All right, so the Delphine Lalaurie was born Marie Delphine McCarthy, which was actually originally McCarthy when her father and his parents came over from Ireland. They changed it to McCarthy. And she was born in 1780 in New Orleans, back when it was still Spanish territory. She and her family were prominent members of the white Creole community. And prior to becoming the infamous Delphine Lalaurie, which was after her marriage to Leonard Louis Nicholas Lalaurie in 1825. She was actually married and widowed twice under, as far as I can tell, not suspicious circumstances. So she's not a black widow, just terrible in other ways. Leonard Louis Lalaurie was a prominent physician, and he was also much younger than her. You know, there's not a lot known about their relationship. The weird thing about her, she's so infamous that you see a lot of conflicting accounts. So you see stuff like, you know, he was very complicit in what she was doing with her slaves, but I've also seen that he was really fed up with what she was doing. But it does seem like he was not super into the marriage from the get-go. He actually wrote a letter to his brother complaining that he had to marry the worst woman in town.
Whoa.
Yes. Damn. Due to the fact that he could not control his manhood. So I've read that he got her pregnant and that's why he married her. I don't know if that's true. She did not have any kids with him. She had 5 kids, but they were all from her previous marriages. But, you know, I guess he at least slept with her, and maybe that was just enough that now he had to marry her. In 1831, after 6 years of marriage, they bought the property at 1140 Royal Street. And by 1932, they had built their infamous 2-story mansion there. And attached to the mansion was the slave quarters. So while living in this mansion, they threw very lavish parties, and they were, you know, considered the belles of New Orleans society. But at the time, she was already gaining some notoriety due to her treatment of her slaves. And the slaves were observed to be, quote, singularly haggard and wretched. The rumors were widespread enough that a lawyer was actually sent to the mansion to remind them of local laws against the mistreatment of slaves. Sometime in 1832, a neighbor actually observed Delphine Lalaurie chase a 12-year-old girl named Leah, who was one of her slaves, with a whip and basically chased her off the roof of the house. To avoid punishment, the girl jumped off the roof of the house and died.
Jeez.
And this happened because when the girl was combing Delphine Lalaurie's hair, it hit a snag, which, how is that even the girl's fault?
Man, Kathy Bates is really temperamental.
I know.
Oh, wait. Sorry, confusing the two.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
They said her body was either buried on the grounds of the mansion, or I also read that it had been thrown into a well. So the authorities were called, and there was an investigation which concluded that the Delphine Lalaurie was guilty of illegal cruelty to slaves, which some of this kind of blows my mind because, I mean, isn't the very idea of slavery incredibly cruel? But anyway, as a result of the investigation, she was forced to give up 9 of her slaves. But of course, they were purchased by family and friends and then just given back to her. So on April 10th, 1834, is when, you know, the truth kind of came to light. So a fire broke out at Delphine's mansion, and Delphine Lalaurie was able to escape with many of her belongings. And a lot of the neighbors were gathering and seeing the fire, and they could hear, you know, people still in the building, slaves still in the building. And they wanted to go in and, you know, help them get out and clear the building. But Delphine and her husband refused to give the keys to bystanders. So they went into the mansion and they broke down the door to the slave quarters, and they found something unexpected. So for this, I'm going to switch over to an article from the New Orleans Bee, which was contemporary. So this article was published April 11th of 1834, which was the day after the fire. And it says, quote, upon entering one of the apartments, the most appalling spectacle met their eyes. 7 slaves, more or less, horribly mutilated, were seen suspended by the neck, with their limbs apparently stretched and torn from one extremity to the other. Language is powerless and inadequate to give a proper conception of the horror which a scene like this must have inspired. We shall not attempt it, but leave it rather to the reader's imagination to picture what it was. Whew. Yes. And the fire had actually been started by the Lollery's cook, who is a 70-year-old woman that was kept chained to the stove. And she was trying to commit suicide because she said that she was afraid of punishment. And the punishment consisted of being brought to a room in the mansion where no one comes back from. So
ghastly and awful in every single way.
And the citizens were furious. They formed an angry mob, and they were calling for the Lollery's death. She and her family were able to escape in a waiting carriage, and they fled the city and the country. And she is believed to have died in Paris in 1842. So no justice.
No justice at all.
Yeah. But the mob did end up entering the house, and they completely ransacked it. So here's another excerpt from an article that was published on April 12th of 1832. The article read, quote, "Nearly the whole of the edifice is demolished, and scarcely anything remains but the walls, which the popular vengeance have ornamented with various writings expressive of their indignation and the justness of their punishment." So I love that. I guess they just went in and tagged the whole place with nasty writings.
Yeah.
So that's the story of the Lollery Mansion. Time and the infamy of the case has led to some exaggerations, although who knows, the article said, you know, they weren't going to describe everything, and it's just the worst thing you could picture. So, you know, with some time, some of the worst things that people have pictured are, let's see, a woman whose limbs were all broken and she was put in a box and they healed all bent out of shape like a crab. I read that as something. It's a lot of like almost medical experiments, which contemporary writing does not support that was a thing that happened, but they said, you know, their stomachs were cut open and their intestines were tied around their waist like belts. They said that someone had their mouth filled with excrement and sewn shut. So these are all, you know, not corroborated, but very often passed around rumors or whatever about what was in the room. But either way, it was terrible. The slaves who were in the room that survived, they brought to the jail and kind of had them on display. They said 4,000 people came and, you know, witnessed the atrocities for themselves. You know, I don't know if that was good for the abolitionist cause or something, but yeah, that's the story. The mansion is still there. It's very impressive from the outside, from what I can recall. I was kind of across the street and there was a ghost tour walking by it, which is how I knew I was at the right place. But it was purchased by Nicolas Cage in 2007 for $3.45 million.
That seems pretty affordable, actually. Yeah.
But 2 years later, Nick got foreclosed upon.
Yeah, it's because he bought that first appearance of Superman comic book for like $5 million or something.
Poor Nicolas Cage. He's really broke. It's the Lollery curse, maybe.
Yeah, shouldn't have bought that house,
shouldn't have bought that house. So yeah, RIP Nick Cage's bank account.
You don't say.
And we are super excited to, you know, check out the house when we're in New Orleans. It's owned by someone, some like oil executive. They say that they'll occasionally be out on the porch, but when they see a ghost tour coming, they like run inside and hide. No one's allowed inside the house. So in American Horror Story, you know, there's a tour that goes inside the house. That is not a thing that exists. It's an actual person's residence. Also, fun fact, they didn't even film the outside of the house for the show. They actually filmed the outside of a house down the street, and the inside was the inside of another museum in New Orleans.
Interesting. All right. Cool. Yep. Man. Whew.
Yep.
That's a tale of cruelty beyond that imagination is, in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Worst stuff you can imagine. I think that excrement lip sewn shut might be the worst thing I can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, yep. I just have to talk about a dude that killed people with an axe. So yeah, that's
kind of boring now, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I think so.
All right. Take it over, David.
Well, the Axeman of New Orleans was active between May of 1918 and October of 1919. So over a year of activity. And he murdered between 6 and 10 people and then injured also another, well, it's under 10 people were injured during that time. And of course, when you think of someone called the Axeman of New Orleans, guess what his murdering implement was?
Is it an axe?
It's an axe, and it's also a straight razor. So,
Yeah.
The other tool that he carried was a chisel. And the kind of odd or interesting thing about that is his signature was, as he would break in with the chisel, he would then leave both that and the murder weapon on the floor near the door. So he would was not motivated by, like, robbery or anything. He never took anything from the victim's homes. So, and he was never caught. So there's really no known motivation. However, there are these two criminologists, Colin and Damon Wilson, and their hypothesis is that the Axeman killed male victims only when they obstructed his attempts to murder women. And that's supported by the murder cases in which the woman of the household was murdered, but not the man. There's the more romantic, I guess, theory, and that's that he committed the murders to promote jazz music. And I'm like, I don't know how you arrive at that, like, connection to, like,
well,
jazz
I know
music.
How they got the connection, but I think that's,
well,
ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll
as a
we'll talk about that, but I mean,
yeah,
like, if it were me, I mean, not that I'm, like, an axe murderer, yeah, but it's, I don't
sounds
know,
sounds like a great way to promote the podcast, just write to the newspaper.
Yeah,
anyone who is playing based on a true crime. No. No, that's a terrible idea.
That's a brilliant idea. We should be marketing around that. But yeah, so it's like in his letter, which I'll read and here in a minute, but it was just he stated that he would spare the lives of people who played jazz music in their homes. So this letter that was supposedly from the Axeman was published in local newspapers on March 13th of 1919. One of the weird, like, things that may mean this is true is that that night all of New Orleans dance halls were filled to capacity, so they're, like, completely packed, and a bunch of also, like, amateur bands played parties at houses all through New Orleans, and there were zero murders that night. So I'm gonna go ahead and read the Axeman's letter, and it's from Hell, March 13th of 1919. Esteemed mortal of New Orleans, they have never caught me and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orleanians and your foolish police call the Axeman of Notre Dame. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with blood and brains, and of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rustle my jimmies. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but his satanic majesty, Francis Joseph, etc. But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover who I am, for it were better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the great Axeman. I don't think there is any need of such a warning, for I feel sure the police will always dodge me, as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as a most horrible murderer, which I am, but I could be much worse if I wanted to. Trust me, bucko. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, and the worst, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death herself. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time on next Tuesday night, I am going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I am going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I am very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in my nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well, then, so much the better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is that some of your people who do not jazz it out on that specific Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe. My axe. Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse. Hoping that thou wilt publish this, that it may go well with thee, I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that ever existed, either in fact or realm or fancy. Deuces, the Axeman.
I think that that might be one of my favorite murderer communications with the public or media or police, like, ever. I was just so, like, old-timey. I like that he uses the word bucko.
Yeah. No, I know.
Is that you, Grandpa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, I really loved reading that, too.
Yeah, he sounded awesome.
I was like, should I be sinister or should I just, like, read it? I don't know.
It's perfect.
I am very fond of jazz music. No.
Oh, I mean, God. Like... You do that one for our Zodiac episode.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Wow. But no, that I agree. That's, like, pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of, like, makes me wonder if that was even him.
It would be pretty crazy if it wasn't.
No, I know, but it's just...
And I mean, I guess there's not really any way to tell. It's not like Zodiac where, you know, he sent letters with a piece of the shirt of the murder victim to kind of prove it. So
yeah,
maybe it really was just advertisement for some jazz halls.
I don't know. But, you know, I think you're right. I believe that it's him. It's just so bizarre.
It's really bizarre. Also, From Hell, isn't that a movie?
Yeah, well, you know, the similarities between he and Jack the Ripper, they were unsolved murders. No perpetrator identified, although they were a lot closer and a lot more theories about who did it with Jack the Ripper, of course.
That is true.
So rather than go into each of the victims and how they were murdered themselves, just know that they were either bashed on the head or... Anyway, they ended up with some axe murdering, really. It was like slit throats. Axe murdering.
Yes, I've listened to a few podcasts about it. I think, like, one of the first victims, it was a slit throat with a straight razor that belonged to the guy's brother, and they thought maybe the brother did it until it turned out to be this pattern of a serial killer, and his MO was, you know, using weapons that were already in the house. So he didn't actually bring an axe with him, but, you know, it was back in a time when really everyone had an axe in their house.
Who
everyone now has, like, a hammer or a screwdriver. I don't think we have an axe in the house, do we?
It's in the basement. Oh no.
Oh God.
no axe, just a chainsaw in the basement. Wait, no. It's in the tool shed.
Yeah.
Along with the Freddy glove. Wait, no, we have a Freddy glove.
Freddy glove is the one we actually have.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yep. We do. But yeah, so, you know, that I don't know. I think that's it's a really creepy story.
It feels more like a ghost story than a true story, but it is a true story.
No, I mean, a lot of the papers at the time refer to him as, like, New Orleans's boogeyman, real boogeyman, you know? Like, and I can't imagine at the time, like, knowing whether or not he was going to appear at your house or not. And, like, just that, like, terror of playing jazz music. Like,
I live with that terror every day. Welcome to being a woman.
Well, like,
everyone is the enemy. That's a crazy story.
Yeah, so not caught. Like you mentioned, some podcasts I have covered it. There was a episode 60 of My Favorite Murder.
I listened to that one. And they also talk about in that one, I guess there's, I forget, it was, so the murders were in, like, 1918.
Yeah.
There's a picture from sometime a little bit after the murder of, like, some really creepy looking dude, I think, on, like, a boat that had an axe, and they're like, it's the Axeman fleeing New Orleans or something. I don't know. There are weird theories. Not as many as Jack the Ripper, obviously, but I feel like one of the theories is that he is Jack the Ripper. No, that's H.H. Holmes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which I think has just been disproven through DNA. So,
hey.
Maybe this is anyway. Yeah.
But really, the lesson here is to just play jazz music all the time.
Yeah, I'm going to play it the rest of the night.
Yep.
Yeah. Play it every night that we're in New Orleans.
Exactly.
Keep the boogeyman at bay.
Yep, that's true. All right, well, I really just wanted to focus on his letter and just kind of establish
that's
his,
like,
character.
The best part.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's my
favorite. Think you did an excellent job.
Your second time
researching true crime.
Woohoo.
Congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you.
And your third time, you get a lollipop.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I guess we should talk a little bit about now the show also, which it's not quite fresh in my memory. It's not like the movies where, you know, we watch it. We tend to watch it the week that we record. So we're not going to do a recap, but we could talk a little bit about it, or just about American Horror Story in general and kind of what it's been doing to rejuvenate the horror scene, especially on television. There are not many horror television shows. And I mean, my mind was blown by especially the first season.
That was good.
You know, I feel like I'm going to, even though I love Coven, like, feel like I might end up talking more about the first season.
Well, and we didn't watch it as it came out, right? Because
no, we waited until it was all on Netflix. And by the time we watched on Netflix, there were like 4 other seasons already up.
Yeah, like Hotel was already going.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have kind of picked and chosen our American Horror Story viewing. But we started with Murder House, and it was so disturbing. In a way, like, I feel like I don't get easily disturbed by either horror movies or true crime movies, at least not really anymore. I don't know what that means for me, but I remember the scene where the guy in the leather suit first shows up and just... Actually, I had to turn it off, and I think I waited, like, 3 months and then watched it again and actually, you know, made it through all of it.
It's pretty intense horror. I mean, it's really graphic and I mean, if you're into horror TV shows and you have not somehow seen any of the American Horror Stories, I recommend them.
What other horror TV shows are there at this point?
Well, there's Scream Queens.
Walking Dead.
Scream Queens
was terrible. I mean,
a lot
I don't want to say it was not for me. I don't want to say it's terrible, but it wasn't for me.
There's, I don't know. I don't know if Sleepy Hollow was considered like a horror TV show. It's gone now.
I watched
like
the first season of it.
Walking Dead, like you said. Slasher was pretty good. We like Scream, Exorcist. I mean,
I did really like Scream. Yeah,
and I love the Scream show, yeah.
But I do feel like, do you kind of feel like, I mean, besides Walking Dead, which feels kind of different to me, you know, American Horror Story, I think, has really done a lot to make horror accessible and popular. You know, I think a lot of people watch that, you know, maybe don't consider themselves horror fans.
That's a great point. Totally,
but are really into the series. But yeah, so we watched Murder House first, and then we skipped over the Nun one, whatever that second one was, and we went to Coven, which is the third season. You know, I love that it was set in New Orleans. As I've said prior to the show, I have been a bit of a fan of New Orleans true crime. I'm very excited for the American Crime Story about Addie Hall, but I think that they've just pushed it back, and now it's not going to be their second season.
What did they do? That's
Law and Order.
Law and Order, yeah. Menendez brothers. Oh. Menendez.
Yeah, but
I can't say that name.
No, they pushed it back. They're doing Versace before they're gonna do their New Orleans one.
Oh right,
which I'm very excited for. But yeah, so we did Coven next because we've heard such great things about it. And New Orleans, I was just reading, we were talking about like, oh, New Orleans true crime. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was like, I have to read about that story that I heard, you know, a bunch of years ago about the Sultan's house, like the Sultan's palace. I'm like, what was that story? Where it was like an entire, like a Sultan and his whole harem were living in this house in New Orleans. And one night, one stormy night, they were like all killed and someone walked by and saw blood dripping down the stairs and like called the police. And I remembered a lot of this story, and then it turns out none of it's true. I was very disappointed.
Oh, no.
But at least we have Delphine Lalaurie and the Axeman.
Delphine is played by
Kathy Bates, who is amazing. I've loved her since Titanic, when I was just a wee lass at 10 in love with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, I've loved her since Misery. She's a poopy head.
Which I still have not.
Or duty head or whatever it is.
I still have not seen Misery. Someday.
My mom and I watched that, and we were like kind of scarred by it when I was a kid. Oh. But it's a really good movie. Really great Stephen King adaptation. But yeah, so Kathy Bates, she's like really forever sealed as not only Annie from that, but as Delphine as well.
She plays a good villain. So because I had not seen Misery, I had not, you know, seen her in a villainous role. She was the unsinkable Molly Brown in Titanic.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. She's great.
Yeah. No, she was really great, but it's not like she's playing a likable character.
No way. Although I will say sometimes, I mean, she doesn't have like she does have an arc, and there are moments where you're almost like,
maybe she's going to redeem herself, and then she never does.
She doesn't. But it gives you like little like teases that she might.
Yeah. Which actually, one of the other stories I was thinking that we should have researched and talked about was Marie Laveau. There's a lot of, you know, characters in this season that are based on real people. So obviously Marie Laveau is very famous, you know, voodoo queen, voodoo priestess.
Yeah.
But we did not talk about her because
Angela Bassett.
We talked about Criminals instead. Yes.
Yeah, she's so good though.
Oh my god.
She's
yes.
amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, I love her.
I feel like she's absolutely the one that you're rooting for, and then I mean they all wind up in hell anyway. Spoiler alert. But
and then we're all rooting against Jessica Lange's Fiona.
But I still love her.
No, she does because that leads us into the Axeman.
Oh yes, her love interest, I guess.
Yeah, played
Demon Ghost. No,
well, yeah, I mean he's like yeah,
kind of it, yeah.
Yep, and Danny Houston plays the Axeman, who, if you have seen Wonder Woman.
He's, which we just watched last night.
Again.
Yeah, obviously, we saw it in theaters.
Yeah,
because we're nerds.
Yeah, and he's General Lundendorf. He's the one that is maybe Hades.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe Hades.
Spoiler alert: he's not.
It's Ares.
I mean, he's definitely not Hades.
Yeah, he's definitely not Hades.
I'm getting all my like.
That's the Axeman. Oh wait,
people mix up. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, but no, he is great in it. I mean, he definitely, I feel like he has that villain face. Yeah, bad guy. He's a bad guy in a superhero movie, so you know he can play a good bad guy. And he's great in the show. He's like, the vibe he gives off, you know, he's very believable as like, almost like a romantic, I guess.
Oh, yeah, it's, no, that's yeah. a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I was kind of struggling to how to describe that, but that was great. I think I agree.
Yeah.
I think it's like he gives like a sadness to the role. But he's also very threatening.
Yes.
At the same time.
But I feel like that's, you know, if you're filling the role or if you're casting the person who wrote that letter, you know, he does seem believable as that. He's like intelligent and just creepy.
And he just wants to fish or whatever, right? He's going to live in a cabin and fish. I do sometimes like, I don't know what it is about him in particular. Maybe it's because he's like an older, distinguished looking white gentleman.
Do you kind of confuse him with Ray Wise? Because
yeah,
I do too.
Yeah.
Are you reading my brain?
I am.
How? That's pretty creepy. Yes, I also confuse him with Ray Wise. I don't think he actually looks much like Ray Wise, but
no.
Like there's something. Yeah,
no, there is. I don't know.
And if you haven't seen that Beach House music video with Ray Wise lip syncing the song.
Oh, that's incredible.
Go do yourself
Absolutely.
A favor and watch that.
Yeah, please do.
Yes.
Because it's really good. The other, I mean, since we're talking about like getting people confused with other actors that are like totally.
Wait, how is that something that we're talking about right now?
I guess we're not talking about it.
No, let's talk about it.
The bad guy in The Fugitive. Speaking of true crime.
Yeah.
It's like.
Is he actually a serial killer?
No. Oh. But the actor that's like ends up being the doctor that frames Richard Kimball.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford's character. He's an actor named Jaron Krabbe. And he also looks like he's like the baby that was born.
Show me a picture.
He looks more like Danny Houston than he does Ray Wise. But if you can visualize it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can see it.
Chelsea's looking at a picture. So I know we can't really explain that very well on the podcast. But anyway, long story short is he does a good job.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, I can't really talk much about the show because it has actually been a really long time since I watched it. But anyway, we tried watching American Horror Story Hotel. We watched past the first episode, but I do want to go back and watch it because I've heard that there are some true crime connections that get revealed at the end.
Ooh, very well. And that hotel itself has a very large history. Is
it based on the Cecil Hotel?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh my gosh. I was just listening to a podcast that was, the Cecil Hotel. So it's Elisa Lam, the girl who mysteriously died and showed up in the water tank.
Yep.
Ramirez stayed there.
Yeah.
And there are more, but I can't remember.
There's a ton. I was just reading about it like about a month or two ago.
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
Yeah, but.
But they renamed it. Has a different name or something.
Yeah.
They have like a cat bellhop now to make it friendly and not haunted. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm totally making that up.
Yeah. I would totally stay there if I was in town. We're staying at a creepy haunted hotel in New Orleans too. Of course.
Yep.
I was like, where should we stay? Google's haunted hotel. Oh.
Yeah, no,
why not?
Be fun.
So maybe we'll have some stories for you guys next time.
That's right. So if you listen to the show in order, this will all make sense. If you listen to that order, you're going to be like, what is going on? I don't know. But that's tough.
Yeah. Anyway, let's wrap this up because it's a mini-sode. And also, I want to go drink more Schlafly pumpkin beer and eat my sushi.
All right. Sounds good. That's some tie-ins from New Orleans and American Horror Story Coven.
And find us on social media.
Instagram @BasedOnATrueCrime. Twitter. True Crime Based.
Facebook, Based on True Crime Podcast.
And keep those reviews coming on iTunes.
Yes, I know. It might sound like we have a million reviews, but that's only because I haven't read them out in a long time. So I could actually use another hit of them reviews.
Yeah, we appreciate your feedback. Honestly, it really helps us improve. It also makes us feel more confident with every episode so we can bring all of you another quality recording.
Yeah. So I didn't actually mention it yet, but due to our trip to New Orleans, there will not be a new episode next week. But starting the week afterwards in October, we will be doing a bunch of awesome, spooky, Halloween-themed episodes. And the plan is, if we could pull it off, we're going to give you 2 episodes every week. So actually do a full episode every Monday, and then later on in the week be releasing a little mini-sode, which will probably be more of like a straight-up horror movie that, you know, we could just talk about some fun real-life connections. So Chucky.
And that's the only one we're going to tease you with.
That's the only one? All right. Stay tuned, you guys. And remember,
death is but a door.
And time is but a window.
We'll be back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.